Welcome to SCOTUScast, a project of the Federalist Society for Law and Public Policy Studies. Our contributors join us from around the country to bring you expert commentary on U.S. Supreme Court cases as they are argued and decisions are issued. The Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker.
Thank you for joining us for this post-decision episode of SCOTUScast. I'm your host, Spencer Caron. On June 1st, 2021, the Supreme Court decided United States v. Cooley. The issue is whether the lower courts erred in suppressing evidence on the theory that a police officer of an Indian tribe lacked authority to temporarily detain and search the respondent, Joshua James Cooley, a non-Indian, on a public right-of-way within a reservation based on a potential violation of state or federal law. In a 9-0 opinion authored by Justice Breyer, the court vacated the ruling of the Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit and remanded. The Supreme Court held, quote, "A tribal police officer has authority to detain temporarily and to search a non-Native American traveling on a public right-of-way running through a reservation for potential violations of state or federal law," end quote. Justice Alito filed a concurring opinion. Anthony Ferrati, of counsel at Spencer Fain LLP, joins us today to discuss the court's decision and its implications.
Really, what started as a traditional run-of-the-mill Terry stop on tribal lands really kind of turned into this large matter as a result of the district court and the Ninth Circuit's ruling in the case. Mr. Cooley was parked along the side of Highway 212 in Crow territory in the southwestern corner of the state of Montana. It was approximately 3 a.m. when this occurred, and the area where he was stopped was in a valley that did not really have good cellular service. And so Officer Saylor pulled up behind him, employed by the Crow Nation, pulled up behind him and did what officers often do. They were concerned for the welfare and safety of those in the community, and in particular on this incredibly cold night, the safety of the individuals who were stopped on the side of the road. As he pulled up, as he walked up to the window, the front window and the back window of the truck continued to go up and down. But eventually he found out that not only was there a child in the back seat, but there was a gentleman in the front seat that had two firearms and seemed to have suspicion of illegal drug activity. Mr. Saylor went back to his car. He called additional help from non-tribal police, from BIA, from state police. And throughout the investigation, they found out that there were, in fact, drugs in the vehicle. There was may have been some intent to do a drug deal, and took him, detained him, and he was properly arrested by the proper authorities, as opposed to Officer Saylor. What the Ninth Circuit did was they took a look at this case after the district court denied the evidence, the collection of the evidence on this, and they created a new convoluted test that would essentially give the opportunity to anybody who is stopped on tribal law to answer a simple yes or no question. And that is, are you a tribal member? And that would be the only question that a tribal officer would have been allowed to ask. And if they answered no, then the tribal officer would have been required by the Ninth Circuit to move on unless they saw actual evidence of a crime being committed at the time. So gave a very large incentive to lie. And that's where we bring this to the Supreme Court. And you've probably listened to the oral argument, or you may have heard me talk about this with Jennifer on the last discussion of it. But oral argument was not really much about the guilt or innocence or the admission of evidence against Mr. Cooley, but it was really much more of a conversation about whether or not how to apply the matter. Were they going to find an inherent authority within the tribe, or against the wishes of Department of Justice? Were they going to use Montana versus United States, a well-known tribal law case out of the Supreme Court that lays out certain elements of how to deal with the case? I don't think I heard anybody during oral argument seem persuaded by an inherent authority, nor a desire to even go down the road of just saying that there is an inherent authority. They wanted to couch it in something, and that something was Montana versus United States. There are they pull no punches in the opinion. They say it straight out from the beginning that this fits, quote unquote, like a glove with the second exception under Montana. Now, one of the things that we've been having a large discussion here in Oklahoma about is, as a result of McGirt last year, tribal law cases take on a larger focus. And over the past few days, I've had people ask me if this case is an expansion of any right. I've actually had people say, does this reduce the tribal right? And the way that I come out is frankly the way that the court did in this case. And that is that this is not a narrowing, or nor does it broaden Montana. It leaves it exactly where it is. And there's, I'm kind of confused a little bit by the narrowing question. But the one thing that I did find in the decision on page 6 and at the top of page 7, that I guess some people could say is a narrowing. It says, we also note that our prior cases denying tribal jurisdiction over the activities of non-Indians on a reservation have rested in part upon the fact that full tribal jurisdiction would require the application of tribal laws to non-Indians who do not belong to the tribe, and consequently they have no say in creating the laws that would be applied to them. So I could see how someone could look at that as potential dicta that narrows Montana specifically in areas that I think many had presumed exist, that, you know, there could be a narrowing. So people could grab onto that, but I don't think that there is. And the second reason that I don't believe it is if you look at Justice Alito's one paragraph concurring, where he just simply says, all we are saying here, to be very clear, is that a tribal police officer has the authority to A, stop a non-Indian motorist if the officer has reasonable suspicion that the motorist may violate or has violated federal or state law, and B, conduct a search that to the extent necessary to protect himself or others, and C, if the tribal officer has probable cause, detain the motorist for the period of time reasonably necessary for a non-tribal officer to arrive on the scene. So again, the court is very clear that this fits like a glove is their term, with the second exception under Montana. Justice Alito is very specific in the basis of his vote. And those two, combined with the fact that we can have a debate about a broadening or narrowing, I just don't see that. I think this fits exactly like the court said, within the exceptions of Montana. Some may be looking at it because it's unique, because there hasn't actually been a case decided under Montana in favor of, you know, anybody trying to use the claim. So in that regard, I think that it is remarkable. But anybody who is familiar with this case, I think, would say this is not surprising.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. SCOTUSCast is a project of the Federalist Society, a not-for-profit educational organization of conservative and libertarian law students, law professors, and lawyers, founded upon the principles that the state exists to preserve freedom, that the separation of governmental powers is central to our Constitution, and that it is emphatically the province and duty of the judiciary to say what the law is, not what it should be. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast series, including SCOTUSCast and Practice Group Podcasts, on iTunes or Google Play. For an archive of past podcasts, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at fedsoc.org/multimedia. That's FEDSOC.org/multimedia.
This has been a FedSoc audio production.